You're listening to Business Daily from the BBC with Steve Evans. Now, yesterday we ran an intriguing interview about deaths that occur through work. Obviously, though, all the attention at the moment is on the swine flu that's erupting in different parts of the world. But on any one day, about 6,000 people die, not from that, but from ordinary accidents and illnesses suffered just by going to work. A barely noticed epidemic by any other name. Which raises, it seems to me, the question of how we evaluate risk. The authorities, for example, stockpile medicines against all sorts of illnesses. In the case of the current flu outbreak, for example, Britain's already stockpiled enough of the relevant antivirus medicine to cover half the population. Brazil, on the other hand, only stockpiled enough to cover 5%. No rights and wrongs here. It's a question of how you weigh possibilities against current alternative needs, like schools, for example. So, to explain this calculation of risk, I turned to Peter Sandman, who advises US government agencies. He told me stocks of medicines were already in place in some countries.
Most countries stored significant amounts of Tamiflu when they were worried about H5N1, about bird flu. So you've got it. An easy decision is to get it out in the hands of regional authorities, local authorities, so it's close at hand if it's needed. Another easy decision is to advise the public to stock up more on food. There are hard decisions whether or not to manufacture a vaccine against this new flu is a hard decision. It takes months, it costs millions, but mostly because it will use up manufacturing capacity that's limited.
Let me present to you a cynical case, and that is that in some countries, tabloid newspapers hold a lot of clout over governments. And what tabloid newspapers like to do is to say to governments, what went wrong? Why has this flu not been met by adequate amounts of vaccine? And that's something which goes into the political calculation, whereas humble people falling off ladders doesn't.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I mean, after a crisis, the recriminations begin. If the crisis gets serious, you know, everybody's going to be saying, why didn't you do more to prepare? If the crisis isn't serious, everybody will be saying, why did you waste all those resources preparing? You're in a whole lot more trouble if you underprepare and it's bad. I mean, go ask the people who managed Katrina in the United States. So understanding that, governments, you know, often try to err on the side of caution. I'm not sure that's stupid, but you're right. One of the things that makes them do that is pressure from media and pressure from the public and pressure from the opposition, which will seize on a crisis to say you didn't do enough or you're not doing enough.
I wouldn't call it stupid. That would be rude. But I'm just wondering whether it's a wise way of making decisions.
Well, wondering whether it's wise is exactly right. But, you know, you don't get to know whether it's wise on the day you decide whether to do it. My intuition is that this risk is serious enough that taking it seriously is wise. If you have too much to drink, put on a blindfold and walk blindfolded and drunk across a busy highway, when you get to the other side, it still wasn't smart. Outcomes are not the only way we judge whether we were smart. The smart thing to do now is to take as many precautions as we can reasonably afford to take while holding off on the most extreme, most expensive precautions until we see if this thing gets worse for the next few days.
Well, I was going to pick you up. You used that lawyerly word reasonable. I mean, one calculation might be, for example, to stop people travelling, close down airports, but clearly that would be something too economically disruptive.
I think that's right. I mean, one of the things that governments normally do, at least in drills, I've sat through a lot of drills of pandemics, and one of the things that politicians routinely do is shut down the airport. Three things are normally true when you shut down the airport. One, it fails to stop the pandemic from reaching your community. Two, it succeeds in slowing the pandemic's reach to your community, which gives you more time to prepare. And three, it has a huge cost. If there's no pandemic, it has a huge cost economically. If there is a pandemic, you wind up having closed the airport and stopped your supply chain early. Most experts think it does more harm than good to shut the airport. Most politicians decide to shut it anyway because they judge that their people will crucify them if they don't at least try to keep the pandemic from coming to their town.
Finally, then, what are you doing?
I went out and bought more food, checked my pandemic larder, which I already had, to make sure that it was as full up as I want. I got extra cash. I got extra gasoline. I'm not going crazy. I'm not treating this as an ordinary day either.
Except that you have a pandemic larder in one of the most sophisticated parts of the planet in Princeton, New Jersey.
Yes.
What's in it?
I have plenty of room in my house, and I have more peanut butter and tuna fish and bottled water than I need this week. So if I don't want to go to the grocery store for two or three weeks, or if it's not safe to go to the grocery store for 2 or 3 weeks, or if there's nothing in the grocery store for 2 or 3 weeks, I'm going to be fine.
And he is the not-going-crazy Peter Sandman. I still want to know, why do we ignore accidents at work but not flu outbreaks? Let me know what you think. world.business at bbc.co.uk.